So, hi everybody, and thanks for coming. Since this is a film and video exhibition and people are actually listening and watching, I don't want to speak too loudly, but let me know if you can't hear me. For the lunchtime gallery talks, we only focus, as Ryan said, on a couple of pieces. So we're going to pass over much of the exhibition. So I encourage you, if you haven't already, to come back and go through and experience the whole thing. But we're just going to talk about two pieces today, and I'll give you a little bit of background on the exhibition. As many of you know, this is the second part of a two-part project. The first part was called Dreams, and this exhibition is called Realisms. And the overall project is called The Cinema Effect, Illusion, Reality, and the Moving Image, which gives you a lot of information about what we are exploring in these two exhibitions that collectively are really looking at contemporary video and film works from the 1960s forward, although Realisms actually focuses on work of the past decade only. And thinking about the ways in which reality and illusion, or fact and fiction, are sort of overlapped and blurred in their distinctions, and how that's happening in our culture, and how artists are sort of responding to that and thinking about that through the works that they're doing, with specifically the moving image. So in this exhibition, there are really sort of two trajectories that Kristen Heilman, my co-curator, and I focused on in terms of the selection of works. So some of the works in the exhibition, one that we're standing in half of right now by Pierre Huig, is an example of works that explore popular culture and mainstream media, very often looking at the film industry, for example, but the international film industry. So looking at Hollywood, but also Bollywood, the film industry in Africa, in the Isaac Julian work, the Italian film industry in Christian Jankowski. So it's very much an international view, but also television and music and different genres like that. And then other works in the show, one of which we'll look at in a moment by Omar Fast, are really looking at historical events, the way the genre of the documentary is often sort of deconstructed in those works, calling into question aspects that we take for granted about the documentary in terms of its relationship to truth and fact. So we'll talk about some of those topics in these two pieces. But that's sort of how the show breaks down. As you go through the exhibition, you'll see that things are grouped together that really are playing on those issues. So we're standing in a two-room installation by French artist Pierre Huig. This is an example of one of the pieces, I would say, that was sort of instrumental in Kristen and my thinking about the exhibition, because it's a slightly older work in terms of the trajectory of the show, and a kind of seminal piece in relationship to this question of realisms, one that I've seen a couple of times, and I'm always just really blown away by it. And the basic structure is that Pierre became interested in this film called Dog Day Afternoon that Sidney Lumet did in 1974. And the film, as you see in the sort of poster, the very kind of wonderful poster for the film. The film was based on an actual event in which a man in Brooklyn attempted a bank robbery in order to obtain funds to give his gay lover a sex change. And there are a lot of interesting things that happened in the actual event that are, you know, interpreted in the film itself that I'll talk about in a second. But what interested Pierre is that when Sidney Lumet went to do this film, although he was sort of highlighting, and the marketing behind the film really highlighted the fact that it was, quote, based on a true story, which is something that our culture loves, right? We see that all the time in film and television, probably increasingly so with things like reality TV. But we all know that many fictional or quasi-fictional films are based in some kind of story. So even though that was very much emphasized by the filmmaker and the studio, they never attempted to contact John Wadowitz, who was the guy who robbed the bank. So even though he'd been released from prison, he'd actually never been contacted. So what Pierre did is he went back to him, knowing also that John Wadowitz was quite obsessed with this film. He'd actually been suing Warner Brothers in order to, as he would say, get the rights back to his movie. And this had become, you know, a really integral part of his life. So Pierre went to him and asked him if he wanted to do a reenactment. Reenactment is something that comes up a lot in the exhibition, this idea of taking something that happened and, you know, recreating it, trying to sort of relive it, trying to understand it through that act of reenactment. So what you see in the next gallery is a two-part video projection in which John Wadowitz, 28 years later, is reenacting his crime. And what's really fascinating about it is that you feel on some level that Pierre has sort of given him back ownership of his own story. He's let him reenact this thing, and he's, when you watch it, he's clearly in charge. He's quite a character, as you could imagine from knowing a little bit about the original crime, the sort of chutzpah of him to go and do this very sort of insane thing, and the way that he kind of worked the bank employees as well as the media was quite fascinating. So you feel that he's been given this opportunity to go through this and really give his story, something that we think is always very important in terms of, you know, historical accounts of anything. But what you also see when you watch him do this reenactment is that this person has become a kind of weird conflation over time between his actual persona, his subjectivity, and the interpretation of him by Al Pacino in Dog Day Afternoon. So there are moments in which John Wadowitz says things like, you know, I'm the real Sonny Wortzik, or this is the real movie. And you start to see that these two things have become sort of conflated and confused for him. And in some ways, and Pierre sort of underscores this by showing us at certain moments the apparatus of the film equipment and making the bank, the simulacrum of the bank, is so clearly not real, quote unquote. So there are ways in which the artist really underscores this, and I think it's a really kind of great example in the exhibition of reality and fiction just sort of collapsing in on each other, so that they've become so blurred, you sort of can't tell the difference. And I got really interested in this whole notion of subjectivity, which comes up again and again in the works, and it's what I really write about in the catalog. And I think that this person is such a fascinating example of how we all become over time a kind of weird conglomeration of what we know to be ourselves, what we think to be other people's interpretations of us, and in some funny ways, even our relationship to media starts to inform our sense of ourselves, even if it's something as simple as sending an email, or the difference between how you might act in person with someone and what you might do when you send them an email. I don't know if you've ever had that experience where suddenly you find yourself feeling, you know, really, you know, I don't know, brave or something, because you don't have to actually face the person, or maybe more creative because you're writing and you're not speaking, or all those different ways that we mediate our experiences with others and with the world. So I think that that's really at the crux of this piece. And I think that the way Pierre has set it up formally, it's really interesting. He gives you a lot of sort of archival materials. There's this really interesting talk show with Jean Parr in which she goes and, you know, years after the crime, does an interview with John's former lover, the person that he was trying to get the money for, to discover that, in fact, she actually did get a sex change finally, and, you know, what's going on in her life and her relationship with John, and or lack of relationship with John over time. And then there's a lot of newspaper articles and things like that about the robbery and about the film. And then, of course, seeing this poster is also, I think, very instrumental, because it gives you some sense of that quality of marketing, you know, what we do to sort of heighten the things that we want our viewers to understand about something. So I love that it's this thing that should have only taken 10 minutes but now becomes the, quote, stuff of history. So that's a really, I think, catchy way to capture one's attention. One thing that I think is really interesting to note is his level of confidence. As he kind of recreates the crime, he's extremely directorial and very confident in the way that he instructs the people around him. And he seems to feel very confident in his memory of the event. So a couple things that are maybe of interest and worth mentioning in relationship to the piece is that Pierre Huyghe does intersperse some, as you saw, actual news footage from the robbery, and also some clips from the film. So Al Pacino playing this John Wadowitz. But there's a way in which there's always this back and forth between the movie and the actual event. And there's a couple of odd things that happened. Before they went to do the robbery, they actually went to see The Godfather in order to, quote, get inspired. And in fact, Al Pacino, of course, was the star of Godfather. So when Al Pacino was later, you know, selected to play John Wadowitz in the film, it was a kind of weird full circle. And in fact, when the robbery occurred, because because there was so much news coverage, because John kept leaving the bank and going out into the public and actually sort of instigating the people around and trying to get a lot of media attention, he was described as, quote, having the good looks of an Al Pacino. So there was always this kind of funny back and forth between Hollywood and the film industry and, in fact, the specific actor and this particular event that seemed to be almost sort of fateful in their overlapping. So let's move on to Omar Fast. This piece is a double-sided projection, so I would encourage you to look on both sides, and maybe we'll just spend, you know, 2 minutes looking, and then I think we'll talk on the other side of the screen. Let me give you a little background on the piece. Omar Fast is an Israeli artist who was born in Jerusalem, but then moved to the United States at like the age of 12 or so, and lived in the United States for several years, but then moved back to Europe and is now living in Berlin. A lot of his work is focused on American culture and certain phenomena in American culture. And as you might have gathered by now, this is a piece about colonial Williamsburg. So he got interested in the idea of a, quote, living history museum. These museums in which they try to replicate the experience of an earlier time period, a sort of historic museum. In this case, looking at 18th century colonial Williamsburg and having actors who live and work there and portray people living in that time period. So Omar went to colonial Williamsburg and he interviewed about 10 different people. The resulting footage on this side of the screen is three of those interviews, one with a housewife, one with a militiaman, and this is a slave. And then, as you've probably noticed, he quite aggressively edits those interviews and sort of weaves together these monologues by these particular characters. And so what starts to happen over this period that you're watching the piece is that these are words that they have spoken, but sometimes whole sentences are actually woven together, pieced together by Omar. And so you start to understand that, in fact, what they're saying is really scripted by the artist. Now, he's done that in a very traditional documentary strategy, the interview, where the interviewer is off camera, you don't hear his questions, and you're only hearing, supposedly, the responses. And in order to sort of call into question that relationship between the artist or the filmmaker or the person in control of the actual footage and the subject, Omar has kind of exaggerated aspects about that. You find yourself feeling curious about what those questions might have been, why perhaps he doesn't position himself in the work. And then, of course, this aggressive editing really calls into question whether anything that they're saying was actually what they felt or expressed at the time. So what we start to understand is that, you know, it's really, in some ways, what Omar wants to express. And in every case with the three interviews, at some point they start to question the artist, and they question his intentions, and they ask certain issues around why he's making this piece, what his relationship is to them, and how they're going to be portrayed. So in that sense, Omar is in fact posing these questions to himself about his role as the artist, as the, quote, documentarian, and how, you know, his position of control in that relationship between him and the sitter. But I think in terms of the subject matter, the work is, I think, a great example of something that comes up in other works in the exhibition, which has to do with the ability to traverse time. And moving image as a medium is something that, of course, is related to time fundamentally. You literally have to sit and watch it. It takes time to get through it. But it's also a great medium to think about the way that we manipulate time in our culture. So in a place like Colonial Williamsburg, where they're essentially trying to have people function simultaneously in two time periods, both in the present and in the past, he's sort of exaggerating that. And you hear in some of the things that they say their own confusion about their position and their relationship to time. It happens maybe most in the housewife, where she talks about feeling like a schizophrenic. That's a word that she uses. And so you start to understand her own kind of confusion about who she is in some way. So it's not just time, but it's also about this idea of playing a particular role and trying to act of a period and be really engaged in that period. The militiaman is kind of, I would say, the most fascinating character on some level. And one thing that starts to happen in his interview is that his discussion of the war, the colonial war, and the Gulf War, which was a war he presumably was involved in, start to get confused. So you see the past and the present again really sort of going back and forth and becoming indistinguishable from one another. On the other side of the screen, you probably notice that it's just a more ambient screen with a lot of images, some of colonial Williamsburg, but also of more present day and current sort of planned communities. And so I think that Omar is also trying to broaden the discussion beyond colonial Williamsburg specifically to the way that in American culture specifically, we try to create these communities for ourselves that are meant to be sort of safe and familiar, and what that kind of growth means in terms of our culture and how it's maybe shifted over time and how the whole notion of community shifts over time.